Next week, the last ever episode of Radio 4's long-running investigative series Face the Facts is being broadcast. The programme started life under another name, Checkpoint, and was first presented by that human punchbag Roger Cook. But for the last 30 years, it's been fronted by the honey-voiced John Waite. I asked him if his predecessor had offered him any advice when he started.
No, I never met Roger. He'd gone to the Elysian pastures of television. But he couldn't really have given advice because the whole idea was to change the programme. Because Checkpoint was so identified with Roger, it was really the Roger Cook show.
Yes.
It couldn't proceed without someone like Roger, and there was nobody like Roger. So the idea was change it entirely and make the story the star. And so that's why I was brought in, a total non-entity, and be very neutral, very low-key, and push the story. And also, because Roger had done a lot of villain interviews, you know, usually ended with a double-glazing salesman, you know, there'd be a clash, get away from that, start doing, well, all sort. The idea was you never knew from week to week what kind of story we'd do. So environmental stories, the whole Pandora's box.
But you did meet the odd villain or two, I remember.
We always kept villains as one of our strands, but we tried to choose villains that were memorable and colourful. The one that's been with me all my time on Face the Facts is a man called Richard Mark Sage, a very larger-than-life character. He used to invent all sorts of stuff, you know. He would hire limousines for a day and hire a chauffeur and hire a private plane to impress gullible clients who would then part with hundreds of thousands of pounds thinking he was a rich man. He wasn't. He was quite a violent man. He had a black belt in judo, so when we met, it was a very memorable encounter.
Mr. Sage, I'm John Waite from Radio 4.
Would you like to leave the premises? Otherwise,
I'm here to record an interview with you, Mr. Sage, about your... Mr. Sage, please don't push me, Mr. Sage.
Why don't you help me for a sort? And I'll pick around the premises. Mr. Sage! I promise.
I want to talk.
Did you have to have any special insurance from the BBC and any special padding and equipment to protect you?
No, I once said to somebody, because we were in a very dangerous situation with a guy who had gone to prison for grievous bodily harm. He'd come out of prison, I was exposing his latest scam, and he had his minders with him, and we were in a stairwell, and it became clear they were looking to him to see whether to do me over. He thought about it for a bit and decided, you know, discretion was the better part of valor. I said to the producer who was with me, what would have happened, you know, if they'd really piled into me? And he said, well, only if they produced a knife would have I got involved. Otherwise, I'd have just tried to get the levels right.
I know you've done a wider range, sadly, of villains and crimes than Roger Cook's programme did, but there is that sense it builds up to a particular climax. Well, how do you get that? Do you have to wait outside people's homes for days and days? And do you rehearse it? How are you going to deal with the situation?
I always think, Roger, it's like the most nightmarish first night if you're an actor. But this is a strange first night because you're not the main part, but you are the kind of protagonist here. You don't know when the curtain's going to go up. You don't know what lines the main part is going to speak. You do have to hang around. I mean, I've hung around for days waiting to get people. Hung around for a week once looking for a man who claimed he was Jesus and was getting a lot of money from people who thought he was. That was a week I sat in the car waiting for him. But our programme, Face the Facts, it begs the question, somebody at the end should face the facts. So if you possibly can, you arrange that, wait for it, and try and capture it.
Well, you know, a lot of our listeners are very unhappy that the programme's going, very sad that it's going. It wasn't your decision to cancel the programme, of course, but are you worried about the state of investigative journalism in the BBC at the moment?
I would say what I think sad about the disappearance of Face the Facts is it was non-newsroom-based, so we had a different agenda. We got a lot of our stories from people, and therefore they were very different stories and quite interesting stories. I mean, for example, many years ago, Roger, a number of farmers wrote to us independently. They didn't know each other. Their letters came in. We saw this pattern about something that was happening to their cows. They were staggering around, displaying signs of madness. We did a programme. We didn't even have the sobriquet, mad cow disease, but we did a programme based on those letters. And of course, bovine spongiform encephalopathy became one of the great stories. So it's a pity that a non-news-based programme is going. But I have to say, hand on heart, the BBC does investigative programmes proud. Actually, if you look anywhere else, the BBC is streets ahead.
Well, I'm sure lots of our listeners hope that you have a broadcasting afterlife, John, but if you had to be remembered by a particular Face the Facts programme, what would it be?
Oh, so many, Roger, but the one I'm very proud of, it was many years ago, again, it was a letter came from India, actually, and it was about Coca-Cola, which had set up a big bottling plant to make Coca-Cola in a beautiful part of southern India called Kerala. And the allegation was that these huge pumps that they were using were draining all the local wells, because people are poor and they subsistence farmers, they relied on their wells. And what water there was had been churned up and was undrinkable. So we went to investigate this, and I ended up interviewing the head of Coca-Cola in India, and I took along some of this water, and I confronted Mr. Gupta with it.
Look, here's a bottle. This water was taken from a well about 5 metres from the fence of the Coca-Cola plant. Now, look at that water, Mr. Gupta. Would you drink that? It's grey. You can see specks floating around in it. I wouldn't drink that stuff. I'm suggesting, Mr. Gupta, neither would you now. Will you tell me truthfully, sir, would you?
No.
Did the quality of water available to those villagers improve as a result?
It did, because the plant closed down. Huge ructions in India when the programme went out. We had demonstrated the pumping operations had affected the water supply. There were other things too, which we uncovered. The plant closed down and it has never reopened.